Hey everybody, it's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We want to welcome you to this first midweek video of 2025. We appreciate you tuning in as always. If you haven't already done so, if you would consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell as a way of staying current with the ministry, when we go live from our assembly building or when we create content for you here midweek, we would certainly appreciate that. So those of you that have been following the channel, you'll know that for the last 2 weeks, because of the Christmas holiday and the New Year's holiday and just family coming into town, etc., I haven't had any time to really make a video, and we have not advanced any further in our From This Generation Forever class since the 22nd of December. But I want to make a short video because there's some things that were presented in the notes for Lesson 250 that I want to make a standalone video on, because I believe it to be a significant breakthrough in terms of our understanding of the printed history of the King James text. Okay? Now, there are two works that are front and center in thinking about this. One of them is this book from David Norton, 2004-2005, A Textual History of the King James Bible. David Norton did a lot of work on collating different printings of the King James and tracing the historical development of the text from 1611 to 1769, okay? And so, he did some good work. Another person who I would add to this, I don't have their book in a digital copy, is Gordon Campbell in his book, The Bible, The Story of the King James Version, 1611 to 2011. He has done a little bit of the same work, but Norton's is definitely sort of the one that has garnered the most attention from people trying to track. The other name I will mention in this is the work of Lawrence Vance, The Text of the King James Bible. This is only available right now in spiral GBC spiral bindings. When the book is final, it will be sold if you want to check out his work as well. But what is significant here is one of the things that David Norton does in A Textual History of the King James Bible is that he only follows the folio printings, okay? So the folio printings are the large editions, okay? And these have been viewed by people who have looked into the issue of the textual history of the King James Bible as sort of the flagship Bibles, okay? So the 1611 was originally published in a folio size. Cambridge did a folio in 1629, another folio in 1638, and then most people then jump to the Cambridge folio of 1762, and then the one done by Benjamin Blaney at Oxford in 1769, and they trace these large folio editions as sort of the flagship, okay? Now, one of the things that we've learned in the From This Generation Forever class is that that's sort of not wise to do, okay? So we've already seen Professor Norton falling victim to the error. The error here is only looking at the folios and not looking at what I call in my class the lesser printings. And by lesser, I mean smaller sizes, whether they be octavo, quarto, or duodecimo sizes. There is work being done in these smaller sizes that is missed when one is only looking at the flagship folio editions. Okay, so we've observed Professor Norton doing this in the 1630s. Okay, and he did this again by only checking the flagship folio editions of Cambridge University, 1629-1638. So what that means is there's changes that are being made in the lesser Cambridge editions during the 1630s that he is not picking up on because he's only looking at the folios, okay? So he missed the additional work being done in the lesser Cambridge editions, okay? Now, Norton is going to make the same error that Campbell makes. So if you follow Lesson 250, I'm talking a lot about Campbell, okay? At the end, we shift gears. And by when I say we, I mean myself and Christopher Yetzer, okay? So I taught Lesson 249. Christopher started emailing me, texting me stuff, sending me information after that. And from there, Christopher put together an Excel spreadsheet, okay? And that's what we're talking about here, okay? Produced an Excel spreadsheet listing all the examples of changes attributed to Paris, that's F.S. Paris, by Norton in the main text of A Textual History of the King James Bible. This does not include any additional examples that might be found in the appendix at the back. Now, of the 63 examples contained in the list, so Norton covers 63 examples of changes that are attributed to F.S. Paris, okay? Now, that could be F.S. Paris's work from 1743 or 1762, okay? Now, Of the 63 examples contained in the list, 23 of them, or 36.5%, had already been edited in a 1683 Cambridge University Press in their folio edition, okay? Now, that is this one right here, okay? Cambridge, notice Cambridge University Press, 1683, okay? Now, it's real important that you understand what's going on. If we go back to this data here, okay, there are 63 changes that are attributed by David Norton to Paris, all right? If you look at this 1683 Cambridge printing, which no one ever talks about, okay, of those 63, 23 of them, or 36.5%, had already been edited in this 1683 Cambridge printing. So what does that mean? That means that, that what that means is that Norton's data is not wholly accurate because he's only looking at certain printings, okay? And that this is important, okay? And it's a quarto edition, so this is a smaller size. So the 1683 Cambridge, where we have 36.5% of the changes that are attributed by Norton to Paris, have already been made in the 1683 Cambridge quarto edition. So that's a pretty high percentage of the work that Norton is saying was done by Paris actually having been done before Paris, okay? So what we did, or what I did, is I took Christopher's spreadsheet and I flipped it into this table where we look at some of the ones that are already changed in the 1683 edition, okay? Now, I will leave a link in the description for these notes. You can go through these on your own, but I do want to just briefly explain what you're looking at here, okay? So what you're looking at are verses in the table that Norton said were first made, the changes were first made by Paris, okay, but actually were made in this 1683 Cambridge quarto edition, okay? So we've got the change, we've got the nature of the change, and then under other, we look at, are there other known editions that are also making this change? Okay, so let's just take the first one. You can see that we're looking at Genesis 23:18. The change is gates, plural, to gate. So the nature of the change is singular or plural. And other here represents other printings before 1683 that this change had already been made in. Okay, so you can see that this change is made as early as 1640. All right. Now, some of these represent change earlier than 1683, but the ones that don't have anything entered into the other column represent changes that are made in the 1683 Cambridge quarto edition, which is, again, this edition right here. Now, this is all new information, okay? And the reason this is new information is because Norton and Campbell did not look at this 1683 Cambridge quarto edition. It is a lesser edition. Again, lesser meaning smaller size. And so therefore, they didn't really look at it. But you can see that there is a lot of editorial work being done, not only in this 1683 Cambridge, but also randomly being done throughout a variety of different years. You know, you got London, you got Cambridge, you got all sorts of different things going on. Okay. So this realization about this 1683 Cambridge and what we can extrapolate from that is new information and understanding the printed history of the King James text, okay? So I just want to summarize here the main, what I think are the main conclusions and takeaways from this exercise, okay? Number one, ascribing the precise date or origin of a given reading in the printed history of the King James text is a cautionary tale unless one has looked at every edition ever printed. I mean, look at this table again here, okay? So we're not even claiming that this is definitive because we haven't looked at every edition. So you cannot claim a definitive point in origin for a given reading in the printed history of the King James text unless you've looked at every single edition. And that's takeaway number one. Takeaway number two, the work of Campbell and Norton, while extremely helpful and beneficial, is not definitive and needs to be checked against other printings. Okay, so for example, if you're reading this book is a very helpful starting point for you to sort of get your arms around what's going on with the printed history of the text, but this book is not definitive. And the reason it's not definitive, again, is because the lesser editions were not checked. Okay? Now, I am choosing to exercise charity with respect to Norton on this point, because who has the time, the ability, the access to be able to literally check every single verse in every single reading in every single edition of the King James Bible that was ever printed, okay? So, as helpful as Norton and Campbell are, they're not definitive and they need to be checked against other printings, okay? Number three, the printed history of the King James text is not as neat and tidy as many would like it to be. So there's like a narrative in pro-King James argumentation about all these things, and I'm just saying to you as bluntly and forthrightly as I can, the narrative is not cohering with the facts on the ground when you actually look at the printings themselves. The text was never printed with uniformity between 1611 and 1769. Editorial changes were made to the text despite the claims of some to the contrary. So there are some that are claiming that the text was never edited, that there were never any editorial changes that were made to the text. That's just not true. I wish it were true, but it's not true. So again, as I've said many times, the cause of truth is not aided by arguments that are factually inaccurate. Okay? This is why demanding verbatim identicality of wording as the standard for preservation is an unhelpful standard and logically leads to one having to declare which edition printed everything perfectly to the exclusion of all others. Okay? Thirdly, or fourthly, it is not correct to think of the history of the text in terms of four monolithic revisions occurring in 1629, 1638, 1762, and 1769. The real story here unfolds year by year and printing by printing. The real story is much more interesting than sort of the narrative that has been propped up for a long time by King James advocates, okay? The real story unfolds year by year, printing by printing. And you can bear that out just by tracing the changes that are in this table here for the ones that are happening. So all of these in the table are happening in the 1683 Cambridge Quarto edition, okay? But a bunch of them are happening either before that or in other editions in London and Cambridge. And so to get the true story, you literally have to look at year by year, printing by printing, to really grasp what is going on. Therefore, statements such as the following are grossly inaccurate. Okay? The first two revisions of the King James Bible occurred within 27 years of the original Oxford printing. First of all, that's not a factually accurate statement. The original printing occurred at London, not Oxford. The 1629, 1638 editions, both printed at Cambridge, focused on the correction of printer errors. Two of the original translators worked on the 1629 edition. There's no extant evidence that corroborates this statement. These statements are actually being copied from David Reagan without attribution. The other two revisions, the 1762 and 1769, focus more on the standardization of spelling. A case could be made that there are two editions instead of four revisions because the first two and the last two were done close together and were stages of the same process. Folks, I that is just simply not true. That is not what happened. All right? It's just not the case. It would be nice and convenient and tidy if that was what occurred, but it's just simply not what happened. All right? And then here's the point I kind of want to end with here. The 1638 Cambridge Quarto, that is again this one right here, H780. This is the Cambridge Quarto that I'm talking about here, H780 from 1683. Okay? The 1683 Cambridge Quarto seems like a massively undervalued edition when assessing the printed history of the text. All right? This is interesting given that the 1683 was the last Cambridge edition to be published until the Paris edition of 1743. Now, we've covered in my class how Cambridge went dormant for a period of time at the end of the 1600s and beginning of the 1700s, and they were actually collecting payment from people to not print the text during this period. So before Cambridge University Press goes dormant during this period, late 16, early 1700s, the last one they do is this quarto edition from 1683, okay? So recall that the Cambridge University Press went dormant for a period in terms of printing Bibles in the late 17th, early 18th century. Now, given that more than 35% of the changes ascribed to Paris by Norton and Campbell had already been made in 1683, One wonders if Paris utilized the last Cambridge printing as the base text for his work. I say, and I submit to you, that the evidence for this is strong, which means the 1683 Cambridge quarto printing is a massively undervalued edition in assessing the printed history of the text. Okay, and let me just say again, we're not done with this investigation. We continue to work on these things as the weeks and months unfold. We appreciate greatly Brother Christopher Yetzer and those who are willing to question and get to the truth of the matter and adjust their thinking and their teaching to the facts on the ground as they actually are. So with that being said, I hope you enjoyed this first short video for 2025. If you've never trusted Jesus Christ for your eternal salvation, you need to recognize and understand that God loves you. Christ died for your sin. He went to the cross. He shed his blood on the cross. And he suffered and made satisfaction and satisfied the offended justice of God against sin. He was buried. He rose again 3 days later, the victor over sin and death. And he wants to give you eternal life as a free gift when you just trust and rely on what he did for you. His death for you on the cross, his shed blood for you, his resurrection from the dead. Believe the simplicity of the gospel today and trust Jesus Christ for your eternal salvation before it's everlasting too late. We appreciate your time. Hope you have a good new year.